I'm Mr. KBO of Portland, Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
Support for this program comes from KBOO listeners and Siren Nation, presenting the 17th annual Dolly Parton Hoot Night at the Alberta Rose Theater on Saturday, June 3rd. Tickets and information for the Dolly Parton Hoot Night at albertarosetheater.com.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and the services available to help people move out of homelessness and back into housing. If you need help connecting with shelter, housing, or other services, please call 211 or go to 211info.org for the most updated information. Today, we have a special episode of this podcast to introduce the new Joint Office of Homeless Services Director, Dan Field. The Joint Office of Homeless Services is a collaborative effort between the City of Portland and Multnomah County. The office was founded in 2016 and had one director, Mark Jolin, from its founding until 2022. After an extensive hiring process, the office hired a permanent director, Dan Field, who started his new role on April 28, 2023. Dan joins the office after 20 years in the healthcare field. We're glad to welcome Dan Field on board in this role and look forward to the expertise he brings to this role. Dan, welcome to the Joint Office.
Yeah, thank you, Jenka. It's great to be here. It's been exciting for me to join the team at the Joint Office and at the county. It's everything I thought it would be when I accepted the role, and just very excited to be here and be leaning in with the team.
To start off, could you tell us about your background and how it led you to accept the job of leading the Joint Office of Homeless Services?
I actually started my career in public service. I've been in the private sector for about 30 years, but 30 years ago, I started as an intern at the state legislature, and that was my first professional exposure to being in the public sector and what it meant to be working at the policy level with elected officials. And I realized a couple of things. With all due respect for my bosses, you don't need to be an elected official to make a difference in our community. And so coming in as a staffer at the Joint Office and working alongside 100 plus other really talented staff, that's my opportunity to make a difference. And I'm excited to be here for that reason. There are some things really that public service asks of you. It's challenging work. You're doing it in the public eye. We got lots of public records requests just my first week on the job, and the comms team and others do a great job of responding to that. But those are things that don't exist in the private sector. Everything you do is under scrutiny. Sometimes you don't have the resources or the flexibility to do the work you might if you were out of the public limelight. So public sector work is difficult, but I think in many cases it's balanced by the opportunity to have a really direct impact on the people that you're serving. And that's regardless of what part of the county or state or city infrastructure you're in. So in between those 30 years, I went to law school, and then I went into the private sector in healthcare, nonprofit for, as you mentioned, 20 years at my last role, but 10 years before that with the trade association. So I've been in the healthcare sector for all that time, and staying close to public sector, staying close to elected officials, staying close to the interplay of the work we do in the private sector and the work that we're leading in the public sector. So this felt like, in the arc of my career, it felt like a really natural move to come back here and lean in with everybody at Multnomah County and the City of Portland.
You've said that your professional experience has focused on bridging housing and healthcare. How do you see the issues of health and homelessness intersecting? And can you share a bit about the work that you've done to address both of these issues?
Yeah, my professional journey in housing and homelessness started in 2016. And some people that have been in the community will remember all the health systems came together and made a really large investment with Central City Concern. And we built what ended up being known as the Ed Blackburn Building. And it was the first time, I think, in our community that sort of health system leaders and the housing and homeless leaders had worked together to build a solution. And the Blackburn building, as we all know, is up and running and working really well and meeting an important need. So after we finished that financing, a group of us got together with Ed Blackburn and others and said, let's not let the work stop with this one-time investment. And so we created something called the Regional Supportive Housing Investment Fund. We pulled in philanthropies, Oregon Community Foundation, and others. We pulled in the major health systems. And we said, where do we go from here? We continued to meet and work, and we eventually partnered with HealthShare to launch something called Metro 300. And this was funded primarily by Kaiser Permanente, but other organizations as well. And the goal was to house 300 medically vulnerable seniors in partnership with HealthShare and with Multnomah County Joint Office of Homeless Services and the other two counties as well. So after that, Metro 300, we housed over 400 seniors very successfully. It was a great partnership. We continued to make investments in housing in Lane County. We made a major investment in permanent supportive housing, the Commons on MLK there right by Autzen Stadium. In Salem, we have a project with Salem Hospital where we're identifying people coming out of the hospital and helping them go directly into housing. And so I continue to do work in my healthcare seat, but in the housing space since then. And that really led me directly to this opportunity to realize that the chance to have a direct impact on our housing strategy in this community, I'd need to move to Multnomah County to the joint office. And so I made that leap. We really need to expand our definition of health. We have to think of health expansively. And we know that the conditions for health exist in our communities, not just in a doctor's office, not just in a pill bottle. And so once you start to think about health more broadly, you realize that perhaps some of the most important healthcare investments we can make in somebody's health are in housing. And so you've seen health systems across the country and here in Oregon move closer to some of what we call these social needs, with housing being in the forefront of that. And so the partnership that we're going to have with HealthShare, for example, is really about thinking about an individual and a community's health more holistically, not getting stuck in the silos of funding and professional titles and designations, but instead starting with the individual at the center, saying, what does that individual need? They may need housing and health support to work really closely together to get them stabilized, whether that's an acute illness, whether that's a chronic illness, whether it's short-term or long-term. They need us to work together in ways that we haven't always worked together before. And so I think as I came into this role, people say, well, he's not a housing professional. He came out of healthcare. It's actually a very natural transition for me. Once you start to broaden your understanding of what does it mean to be healthy, what does it mean for our community to support the health of individuals and families living here? And from that point of view, it makes a lot of sense that somebody in healthcare would want to come and work in housing and homeless services.
How are you approaching your new role leading the joint office? What's your vision for the office?
I appreciate that. Yeah, I envision a joint office that is really working collaboratively with city leaders, county leaders, and community leaders, and working together around a unified strategy. And I think just in the last couple of months, we've seen some great alignment. Our new county chair has really declared her priorities and her direction, and I'm here to support that. So for example, she's teed up a major initiative, Housing Multnomah Now, and we're going to work on that in the context of the governor's call to action around Oregon All In. In fact, my next meeting, I'm heading right off with a group to discuss that, and we're trying to create a sense of urgency with that work. I have some other priorities as well. We have the Supportive Housing Services measure, which we continue to implement. I think we're in the third year of that, and we're still getting up to speed with that, frankly, and I want to make sure that we're deploying those dollars effectively and in the right places to have an impact on our community. We continue to strengthen, under the chair's leadership, continue to strengthen our partnership with the city of Portland in particular, and I'm excited to lean into that work as well.
What do you see as some of the biggest challenges right now in addressing the homelessness crisis in our city and county?
I think one of the issues we have is there's a lot of energy in this space and a lot of people trying to have a make a difference, make an impact. And I think there's a question of alignment. We've got to all be pushing in the same direction. So I'll give you an example. HealthShare of Oregon, which is our regional coordinated care organization, serves about 400,000 low-income Oregonians in the greater metro area. They now have the ability to use some of those state and federal Medicaid dollars for housing supports. We want to make sure that the efforts that HealthShare is driving align with the leadership that we have here in Multnomah County in the homeless and housing services space. So we're meeting with HealthShare on a regular basis to make sure that as they come online with their housing support strategy, that they're closely aligned with the work that the three counties are doing. So that's just one example of where we need to make sure that we're really staying closely coordinated and aligned in our efforts.
You see some potential collaboration between the Joint Office and the Health Department in Multnomah County?
I do. Yeah, there's some great work going on there. It's very early, but I think that the chance to really figure out when somebody enters our healthcare system and we identify that they have housing insecurity or they have a health condition that depends on being safely housed in order to address the medical condition, that's a great chance for us to partner. There's an early partnership happening in Washington County that I'm excited to bring to Multnomah County. There's actually joint case conferencing going on between the county housing staff and Providence and Kaiser. So they get around a table on a weekly basis, they identify, they're working off a list of vulnerable folks. The challenge we've had on the housing side is they don't necessarily know where the entry points are on the healthcare side. And the healthcare folks who are trying to provide case support for those vulnerable individuals, if they identify housing insecurity, they may not know who at the county they need to reach out to. So the joint case conferencing where there's multiple entities focused on one individual allows us really to meet those needs holistically, whether those are healthcare needs or housing needs. So that's the kind of innovation I think we can do with our own county health department here in Multnomah County.
It's a lot of people come in to the emergency department who are experiencing homelessness and maybe don't have a place to go after that.
And what I hear from healthcare staff is they understand that housing is the most critical need, maybe even more than the medical needs that the person's presenting with. But they don't know what the pathways are. They don't know who to call. They don't know if that person has been assigned a residence. They don't know what options are available for that person, motel vouchers, shelters, other housing opportunities. And we don't want our healthcare personnel to become housing experts. What we want is to be able to partner with them and allow them to make some direct connections for that person who is has some housing needs. We also hear on the housing side, heard our housing staff say, I know this person is a HealthShare member. I don't know who their primary care doc is. I don't know who their care team is. I don't know who I call to say we've got some follow-up on medication or wound care or other chronic disease issues.
Oh, that's great. I want to ask you about diversity, equity, inclusion. Those are key values at the Joint Office and at Multnomah County as a whole. How does equity fit into your work? How does it fit into your vision for the Joint Office?
Yeah, it's really important for me, and I've been very pleased to arrive here and see the long-standing emphasis on equity. And even in the Joint Office, I was really pleased to see I've got a very strong equity leader on my direct executive team, and that's really critical to have her there and the work that she represents on behalf of her team. I will tell you that one of the bittersweet moments of leaving my former job I was really leaning in on some equity work there. The organization I left is getting ready to start up a Center for Black Health and Wellness. We've announced that publicly. We've met with Multnomah County leaders to get that launched. And it was hard for me to leave before the doors actually opened. And so I'm rooting for my former colleagues to get that up and running, and we'll support them from Multnomah County to get that done. But that gives you a sense of the energy that I bring to this work. We know that communities of color are disproportionately impacted by housing security. And what that means to me is that our efforts to address it have to be disproportionately focused on those same vulnerable communities. You can't do the same thing for everybody and expect the same outcome. And so I think the culture here at Multnomah County is very supportive of that type of approach to our work. And I was pleased to find that when I got here.
In your welcoming press conference, you had a message for unhoused people in the Portland metro area that you are at the center of our work. Would you be able to expand on that a little bit? What would you like to say to people experiencing homelessness in our area right now?
You know, I think the situation on the ground has really changed dramatically. And I think all of us in leadership roles have to acknowledge that the impact of drugs on our community, there's been a lot written about that. I'm not an expert in substance abuse, but we know that's driving some of the challenges of getting people housed and keeping them housed. And so our strategies and our work with people have to adapt accordingly. We know that we have a mental health crisis in our community, and we don't have the infrastructure to deal with people who are struggling with mental health issues. And so even while we're focusing on building that infrastructure, we need to acknowledge in our housing work and our homeless support work that people are not just in search of affordable housing. They need support with their substance use disorder and with their mental health crisis as well. So I think it's important for us to say to individuals, we see you as a whole person. We see you have housing insecurity and you may be homeless, but we also see that you have other health-related challenges that you're dealing with. And it's incumbent on us as leaders who are bringing resources to those folks to do it in a way that sees them as a whole person and sees them as somebody who is struggling on multiple fronts. And we can't just say, we're here to meet your housing needs. Somebody else will come along to meet your health or substance abuse needs. I think it's part of what we owe to folks to address them as complete individuals.
Thank you for that. I want to ask what you would like to communicate to housed Portlanders who are concerned about visible unsheltered homelessness in the city.
You know, it was interesting. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, was referring to some efforts going on in one neighborhood in our community. And they said, well, the housed folks that are leading the effort, they just don't want to see unhoused people anymore. And they want to move them out of their community. And I'm not going to say that that sentiment doesn't exist. But what I will say is I think in my conversations, both coming into this role and now that I'm here, my conversations are that people really understand that when somebody is sleeping on the street, it's the worst possible place for them to be. And somebody who is housed wants to address that and support that person in getting housed. Sometimes it can come across as, I don't want that person sleeping in front of my building or my condo building. But I think what's at the root of it for the large majority of people in Multnomah County is, why can't we as a community figure out how to get these folks indoors and get them on a pathway to permanent housing? That path may not start at permanent housing, but it's always got to be pointed in that direction. And so to those folks who have been volunteering, paying taxes, advocating, letters to the editor, talking to their neighbors, I know the sentiment that's at the heart of that concern is we want to support the most vulnerable members of our community, and we're going to try and do that.
What's your message to service providers that are funded by the Joint Office?
I just want to acknowledge them. I did a Safe Rest Village tour earlier this week, and I was able to meet some frontline caregivers. These are peer support specialists, behavioral health specialists, housing providers. I ducked my head into a tiny pod, and I met somebody who his job is to work with people to get their ID back, to get maybe some past fines cleared up, to get their landlord references in order so that they can be housed. And I just want to acknowledge them. This is really hard work. It's draining, it's challenging, it's complex. The pay and the support is not where it should be, frankly, and that's something that we have to address as a community. We have to strengthen the pipeline so that we're providing training for people who are willing to go on the front lines. And so I think that's an important piece. You and I have talked about individuals experiencing homelessness. We've talked about the community at large and taxpayers. We've talked about elected officials. The piece of that I want to acknowledge is our workforce and people who are really leaning in on a day-to-day basis. It's really challenging work, and I think we've got to pay attention to supporting them and to making sure that they have what the resources they need to do their jobs successfully, because that's what they're committed to and that's what we owe to them. So shout out to the frontline providers, whatever that looks like, wherever you're working, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. We're here for that group as well, and we're going to try and support them as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dan Field. Dan is the new director of the Joint Office of Homeless Services, which is a collaborative department working with the City of Portland and Multnomah County to effectively end homelessness in the Portland metro area. In every episode of this show, we share the story of someone who has experienced homelessness in the Portland area. Today, we share the story of Chris and Ashley, who I spoke with outside of Cultivate Initiatives, which is a local nonprofit that started in 2019 on Southeast 122nd Avenue.
My name's Ashley, and I'm born and raised right here in Southeast Portland.
My name's Chris, and I'm originally from Oregon. Born and raised. Small town, Goble, up Highway 30, about an hour north of Portland. If you take up Highway 30, it's, if you blink, you miss it. It's not much there. My family's wealthy. I thought I was above all of this. I thought I was better than those people. Now I am one. And it's sad. Just how we're viewed. Like, man, walking in. We went to the bank yesterday. And it was so sad to see the way like people looked at us.
I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I get it.
I don't know what I smell like. I mean, I'm not showering very frequently right now. But it's, I thought I was better than those people. You know, and it's sad to know that I used to view things that way. You know, I've been spoiled. I won't lie. My whole life. So this is a tough pill to swallow.
You didn't understand. Like, how can your hands look like that? How can your nails look like that? How can you get that bad?
Yeah. I had no frame of reference whatsoever. Yeah. I had no idea that like this would be the only outfit that I own right now. Because everything else I take it. So it's pretty dirty.
If a shower is going to be in the mix, that's usually, I mean, that takes up a few hours because you just got to gather all your stuff, get there, wait in line.
Yeah.
Figure out where it's at, get it there on the bus or whatever.
And we were trying to get water the other day and nowhere would fill it for us. You know, I mean, just there's showers around town, but it's so exhausting to try to, like, these everyday necessities to have to fight for and like try to find, or like I never imagined that I would have to travel somewhere to take a shower. My mom passed away when I was younger. That definitely caused my drug use to spiral out of control when I was young. I didn't know how else to cope, so that's when I started using. When I was like 11 and 12. There was no support. I was left alone quite a bit, and used my mom's cancer drugs when I was a kid, and still don't have those coping mechanisms, you know, still trying to figure out how to handle life on life's terms, you know, because if you don't go through your childhood learning those coping skills, you don't have those coping skills as an adult, so.
You reach for whatever coping skills you do learn,
yeah,
and that's, you know, coping
and
skills.
And they worked, maladaptively, you know, they got me to this point, but it's very evident now that, like, I don't know how to problem solve correctly, but I'm getting there. Figure it out.
It's just like bad feeling, like cover it up, process and work through it. Yeah, cover it up, okay. Make it go away. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like, you know, whether it's shopping or materialistic items or drugs, you know what I mean?
Even for, like, prescribed antidepressant or whatever.
Yeah. All these Band-Aids that we have, you know.
Put on your happy face, right?
Yeah, as long as I look happy and have nice clothes on.
I mean, I started cutting and using at a young age also, so, I mean, my first coping skill was self-harm, so. Yeah. I've had lots of opportunities, you know, to do those things myself, but I always revert back, I think, to you know, self-harm for sure. Even when I gained tools, like we had quite a few years of sobriety under our belt. So we were on Suboxone for 5 years, and doing really good.
Yeah, we lived together, we had all the kids, you know, we adulted pretty well.
COVID happened, and all of us, you know, I got laid off, the kids weren't going to school, we were all sitting around staring at each other all day long, every day, in this tiny home, like, couldn't even go anywhere, and eventually, yeah, we had like a glass of wine one night, and it just spiraled out of control from there, you know? We have custody of all of them. His son that we don't have together was with his mom, but he would come over. They would come over for, you know, spring break and weekends, and, you know, we had Christmas at our house. You know, we did all of that. We had a family.
Almost unfathomable, like, to try to piece things together to get to that point again. It'll happen. I'm not going to stop until it does. I know how to persevere. That's definitely one thing this lifestyle has taught us. And not to give up. I mean, I haven't seen my son in like 3 years. There's no guidebook for this. There's no HR department, you know, or HOA. Like, hey, my neighbor threatened to kill me with a knife. Like, what do I do?
He knocked me out last night. Like,
this guy punched me, and he's like 6'3", 225.
For no reason.
But I was intimidated for my life. I mean, we live in fear.
And I don't even know if the police would even really care, you know, honestly. I don't know what they could do. I mean, when this is, like, everything was pretty new, we had our car stolen, and I remember, I ran up to a cop one time, and I was like, our stolen car's right there, the guy's in it. And he did nothing. He's like, I'm on a case. Like,
yeah.
Just kind of stuff like that. Like, they don't have time for it, or they don't care, or, you know, there's just so much of it, they just, I don't know. It was in North Portland, and he said he was on a case in downtown Portland. He was sitting in a parking lot by himself.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Not about that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, I wasn't even homeless. I was staying in a sober living house. We still had our car. Like, yeah, wasn't even homeless then. Even then.
You do get judged, even by the police. And the other day when we had to move that tent. Mm-hmm. Remember when we were at the other camp?
Mm-hmm.
Because they said that we were on the apartments.
Oh, like, yeah.
Security,
The security at places is crazy right now. Like,
They cuss at you?
They cuss at you. They walk up with the cameras in your face, filming you, and they just judge more than the police officers.
There's, like, no human decency anymore. You know, like, if you're homeless, like, you're next to nothing.
Like, we're sitting down trying to get shade somewhere, and it's like, go somewhere else, like, go to your own property.
Yeah, go to your own property. I'm like, we don't have property, you know?
That's not my fault. I don't know. But yeah, no, they definitely judge.
You're not safe being homeless. There's no safety. There's no door to close.
We've had to restart over. We've only been out here 3 months, and we've had everything stolen from us 3 times.
We've been robbed.
Everything. Our second night out here, literally everything. We had, like, you know, we had some stuff with us because we just, you know, got out of a house. So, you know, we had phones and we had tablets, IDs, cards, you know, medicine, hygiene stuff. Yeah. Every single thing was every single thing was taken.
Yeah, psychiatric medications were all stolen.
Everything. He was still sober then, so all his Suboxone, everything was taken.
Yeah.
I was so excited to find this place, though. Like, it's so cool. There's some hope, you know, when we restart, that there is a little bit of a helping hand out there, you know?
It's hard with such low self-esteem and, like, being as depressed as we are, right? So to have them help planning and whatnot, you know, they're going to help us get our IDs, things like that, hopefully get us into a place.
They have breakfast here in the morning.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting. Those days and coffee.
I ate more yesterday than I had in weeks, months, probably. I had 2 meals. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, babe.
Yeah.
That was Chris and Ashley, a couple who talked to me outside the offices of Cultivate Initiatives. More information about the work of Cultivate Initiatives can be found on their website, cultivateinitiatives.org. Been a special edition of Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching for Out of the Streets of Portland. And you can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, multco.us/johs. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
Host of Democracy Now!, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we're committing to learning from the past, giving honor to the experiences that shaped all of us, and leaning into the legacy we want to leave. We have a tendency to gloss over, rewrite, or try and forget the past or what no longer serves us. A past that might be tainted with mistakes and failures. It's easier to remember the good stuff than to relive the struggle. But where's the learning? What happens if we forget without forgiving? We're all on a journey with good intentions, goals, and dreams. But we're also evolving. We are, and those that came before us did too. How many times can you look back over your short lifespan and say, "Oh, if I knew what I know now"? Think about hundreds of years. If they only knew then what we know now. But that isn't how life works. That's not how progress is made and how evolution.